Did you give us the word of visitation?
Good morning, brothers and sisters. We also need to have some visitors from Bondi, so that's really good. Well, some thoughts today from a favourite verse in the book of Exodus. I think everyone's got favourite verses, and in Exodus chapter 15, verse 2 is my favourite verse in that chapter. And I'd like to spend a little bit of time thinking about this morning, please. So the song of Moses, Israel has passed through the Red Sea, the song of Moses and the children of Israel that they sang. Verse 1 begins, "I will sing unto the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously, the horse and his rider have been thrown into the sea." And this is my verse, "The Lord is my strength and song, and he has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will prepare him an habitation, my father's God, and I will exalt him." And to me, that there's a lot of exhortation for myself in this verse. I'm just going to share a few things with you this morning. So the first thing to think about is that when Israel left Egypt, God delivered them in stages. It wasn't just one mighty act and then Israel was to leave. It was a progression. And if you think about it, when Moses first spoke to the people and spoke about the deliverance, and then Moses went and spoke to Pharaoh, things got worse rather than better. And Pharaoh Morley said, "Well, you guys got plenty of time on your hands to discuss these things. Here's some more work. And you can make bricks, but there's no straw to be provided. Get your own." And often for ourselves, deliverance involves more difficulties than we first thought. And things can be difficult, even though the promise of salvation is very clear. Things are not easy. When the plagues first came upon the nation of Egypt, the people of Egypt, Israel would need to listen to God so that they weren't caught up in the problems and the plagues that affected the Egyptian people. And of course, the Bible encouraged us to be careful, to be watchful in the end times, because it says, like a snare, these things will come on the earth, and we don't want to be caught up in the things that God has promised for the earth. When Israel left Egypt, of course, we know quite clearly that they didn't go the coastal route, the easy route, the normal route that you'd take to get to Canaan. They went a different way. And of course, we need to ask ourselves, I need to ask myself, is the route that I'm on for the kingdom the route that I would expect? Is my life what I would expect, or is God leading me in a different way than I had perhaps first thought or initially thought? And where I am now compared to where I was at baptism is perhaps different than I would have thought. When Israel were a good distance away from Egypt, and the fear of the nation was behind, Egypt was left, and they're on the way to the promised land, and things were positive and hopeful. And then trouble struck, didn't it? Because now Pharaoh is coming with all his chariots and horsemen to retrieve his slaves. And things are not good. And we could always say that sin and death are always in the background of our lives. There's problems in the background of our lives that affect us and worry us. And God is going to show at the waters of the Red Sea that once and for all, Egypt will be forgotten and gone. It's never to be thought about again, because the army that you see now, you're going to see them as dead bodies in the morning. And so if we come back to chapter 14, in this incident, verse 13, Moses' encouragement to the people who are petrified is, "Fear you not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show you today. The Egyptians whom you have seen today, you shall see them again no more forever." And so the call to fear not is the call to have faith, to trust God, have faith. And at times that's not easy. It's not easy to do that. I'm sure you know that to be true. I know that to be true. It's okay to say have faith, but to do it is a different matter. And it's a call for Israel to remember what God did in Egypt. Just think back. Just think back a couple of weeks ago. What was God doing in Egypt? He was at work. And we need to think back in our own lives. Think back a week. Think back 2 weeks. What has God been doing in your life? He's done it before. The good things to deliverance. He can do it again. So all you need to do now, says Moses, is to stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. And verse 14 perhaps explains what it means to stand still. It means the Lord shall fight for you and you shall hold your peace. It's not about arguing with God, not that we argue by physically arguing with God, but it's the way we conduct our lives can be arguing or disagreeing with God. Just watch what God is going to do. And of course this is God's challenge, to stand still. And to stand still was a command for just that moment. Because in the morning they were told to move forward, to go in faith, walk into that sea that's going to part. And it's interesting that that's verse 15. The Lord said unto Moses, "Why do you cry to me? Speak to the children of Israel that they go forward." So stand still for the moment, but then the command is to go forward. And interestingly, the two aspects of Israel's faith recorded in Hebrews 11, we don't have to turn there, two things. The one is that they went into the Red Sea and that they circled the city of Jericho in complete obedience to God. And of course, at the time of Jericho, we know quite clearly that the people were to hold their peace, and they walked around that city once every day, and then on the seventh day, seven times, they were to be quiet, hold your peace, until you hear the signal to shout. So Moses and Israel at the Red Sea were further reinforced that God was their salvation. And this is what that verse 2 in chapter 15 says. He has become my salvation. It's not that God is automatically, magically your salvation. It's a becoming. It's a learning from God. And Israel witnessed these 10 plagues and they were aware that God was their salvation. And in this final deliverance, he became their salvation. They saw it with their own eyes. It was meaningful to them. And of course, as people of God, we also need that reinforcement. We need to know for sure that God is our salvation. And he's becoming it every day in our lives. We see the hand of God at work. God has always been mighty to save. And you might have heard the expression that God is in the saving business. That's what he's about. He demonstrated that in Eden when he sought to deliver Adam and Eve and promised Eve that wonderful son, the one that would bruise the head of the serpent. So, you know, so I can say, well, I'm in the education business. Or Jan can say, I'm in the health sector. And God says, well, I'm in the saving business. And that's what I'm about. Everything about what I do is about salvation. And that's what God is. But we need to trust that. Trust that to be true. So salvation is something that can only come for each of us if we believe it, if we trust it to be true. And that's the key phrase, of course, in verse 2 of chapter 15, God has become my salvation. And God was saving Israel little by little, demonstration of his power. And of course we want to see that in ourselves. Little by little, God is helping us to become more like his son. He wants us to be there in his kingdom. And Jesus has given his life as an example for us of how we should live. In Israel, we're largely disconnected from the plagues in Egypt. When I say disconnected, because the plagues were about what happened over there in Egypt. It affected the Egyptians. It didn't really affect the Israelites as such. Excepting the last plague, the plague of Passover, it was the the deliverance of Passover for those that heeded God's call to obey the commandments. However, at the Red Sea, things were different. Israel's lives were directly on the line now. In front of them was the water, behind them was the army, and there was no way out. They were trapped in that sense. And God brought salvation. He saved Israel at the Red Sea. The phrase, "He is my God," could rightly be said because now God is my God. I mean, he's your God, he's my God, he's my father's God. And not necessarily my father, Alan Simpson, or Sly Gordon Sutcliffe. It's the fathers, you know, the people of faith throughout the generations, so that you can be a child of God and have no parents in the ecclesia as such. In the way, in the faith, but you can have a relationship because you're directly linked to Abraham, to the fathers. So my father's God. And Moses may well have been talking about his father Amram, but more than likely speaking also about the fathers of faith. He's a reality. He personally saved me. He worked in the lives of other people. He can work in my life. So just a few little connecting thoughts there about Israel declaring God as their God, a personal God. So Jesus encourages us to think about God as our Father. And of course we know quite clearly the wonderful Lord's Prayer. You know, teach us to pray, Lord, like John taught his disciples to pray. And Jesus begins, when you pray, say, "Our Father." He didn't say, "My Father," he says, "Our Father." The 12, "You have a father, I have a father, he's your father." And to Mary, we read this in the readings the other day, Mary Magdalene at the tomb, Jesus says the wonderful words to her, "Go and tell my brethren that I ascend to my Father and to your Father, to my God and your God." So Mary, he's your God. He's your father. And I want you to tell the disciples that that's the case. And that's a wonderful little connection there. So to conclude then, let's just think briefly about preparing God a habitation, because that's the last aspect of this verse 2. "He is my God, and I will prepare him an habitation." So Israel the next day saw the evidence of God's salvation for them. The Egyptians dead on the seashore. Never again would they be in fear of Egypt. God's plan was for his people to be led to the promised land, to a place of inheritance. And throughout this period we see quite clearly that God wanted to dwell with Israel. But the purpose of the tabernacle was to have it in the centre of the camp, and Israel all around the outside. And even on the march, when they were going towards different cities and different places, the Ark of the Covenant was right there in the centre of the congregation, in the middle of the tribes. And there were 6 tribes in the front and 6 tribes behind, and the Ark was in the centre. And when we think about Israel preparing a place for God, a habitation, a place to stay, our thoughts might be, "Oh, well, they were thinking then about building God a tabernacle, or later on building God a temple." But in reality, of course, we know that God's real desire was to dwell with people. And buildings mean nothing. And as Christopher Alvin, I think we've got it quite right when we talk about the church being the assembly, or the gathering, the ecclesia, not the building. So two little scriptures to finish. The first one in Isaiah 66, just to think about this place of God to dwell. Familiar words for us, I know. Isaiah 66 in verse 1 and 2. "Thus saith the Lord, the heaven is my throne and the earth is my footstool. So where is the house that you're going to build for me? And where is the place of my rest?" And of course then he gives the answer. "For all these things have mine handmade, and all these things have been, saith the Lord. But to this man, or to this person will I look, even to him that is poor and of a contrite spirit, and trembleth at my word. And that's it, where God wants to dwell. He made heaven and earth, and the stars. Sure, by his great power, but he wants to dwell with people, and a certain type of people, someone like Jesus. And lastly then in John chapter 14, John chapter 14 verse 1, so let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me, for in my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. So God has many places that he lives in and has lived in, many people that he dwells with. Yet there's room for much, much more. There's lots and lots of room in my Father's house. And Jesus is preparing. He's preparing people now. In this room, right now, he's preparing people for God to live, God to dwell. So let's, by faith, allow Jesus to be at work in our lives and to prepare a home for God. Verse 23, Jesus answered and said unto him, if a man love me, he will keep my words, and my Father will love him, and we will come unto him and make our abode or our dwelling with him. So then in summary, let's just look back at your life. God is your God. See the way he's been at work in your life through the years, through the good times and through the difficult times. Let him become your salvation. There are times we need to stand still in front of a severe trial and a stress and allow God to save us. As David says in Psalm 40, I waited patiently for the Lord. That's David's way of explaining Exodus 15. I waited patiently for the Lord. He inclined to me and heard my cry. He lifted me up out of the horrible pit and out of that miry clay. And we don't know how long David waited for that deliverance. And yet there are other times that we need to hold our peace and to be quiet and to trust that God will act. Be quiet, it doesn't mean to not pray, but it's to stop the negative self-talk. The negative self-talk will tear us down, but rather to listen for God. And finally, as we look to Jesus, we want to prepare in this ecclesia and in our personal lives a place for God to live. And of course, the emblems that we're going to take soon remind us of that.